Tonight we're going to begin the fourth one, which it has a couple of translations. One is joyous effort, and another translation is enthusiastic perseverance. But what it means, it's the mind that takes delight in doing what is constructive. Okay, so it's an enthusiastic, joyful mind that has the ability to it has effort and it has the ability to persevere. It's not going to kind of, you know, poop out in the middle and, you know, sludge along at the beginning and fizzle at the end, you know. But it's going to have some kind of life and buoyancy to it, so that our whole practice is done with joy and not with shoulds and oughts and supposed to's and obligation and guilt and all those other wonderful things that we bring along with us. Okay, but this one instead is a joyous attitude, and it's really important to cultivate this, because this is the one that, this is the attitude that makes us want to practice the Dharma. Yeah, if we don't have much joyous effort, then there's no real aspiration, there's no delight in the practice, and pretty soon everything just, you know, goes the way of all the other projects that we've started and never finished. Okay. You know, all those half-done macrame kits from the 70s in your basement and, you know, all those things. So then the Dharma has another shelf in the basement with all the other half-done things. So to avoid that happening, and to be really able to complete our spiritual path and progress, then we need this fact of joyous effort. Okay. That takes delight in doing what is positive or constructive. Okay. So there's a clarity of the motivation, and there's a real strength of the mind, okay, so that it's free of the shoulds, oughts, and supposed tos. And it arises from really seeing the advantages of the practice, the advantages of following the path. Okay, and so, you know, when we have this, because we've seen the advantages of the bodhisattva path, then we have this delight in practicing what is virtue, what is virtuous, what is constructive, and then as a result of this joyous effort, all the realizations come. Okay? So it's a direct cause, really, for actualizing the entire path, and it gives whatever we do some kind of strength and purpose and liveliness. And I think, you know, sometimes people say, you know, these Tibetan lamas, they're happy people, you know, why is it? I mean, you look at His Holiness's schedule, you think you're busy, you know? I mean, His Holiness, he's jetting from here to there through all these different time zones, different languages, and strange food, and all these people, you know, going, you know, bless me, Your Holiness, you know? And what is it that gives him the kind of strength and joy to sit down with thousands of people, you know, week after week and teach and do all these different things? It's this perfection or this far-reaching attitude, because there's a delight and a joy in doing the path. And so you immediately sense it, you know, when you're around somebody like him. Yeah. Or you look at Lama Zopan, you know, he meditates day and night. We joke that he carries his cave with him. You know, he doesn't need to move to one. It just comes with him, with New York, Chicago, Tokyo, wherever he is. You know, nobody's ever seen him lie down and go to sleep. And he doesn't, it's not that he stays awake all night because he's doing some kind of ascetic trip, saying, oh, I've got to force myself to stay awake because all these sentient beings are suffering and I better help them. You know, it's not that kind of attitude. It's instead this one of joyous effort, and there's just this delight in, you know, wanting to work for the benefit of others, wanting to create the cause for enlightenment, wanting to do the practice. And so therefore it just becomes real easy for him to stay up all night and meditate. You know, Whereas for us, you know, 8 o'clock's too late to start a session because we're goners. But once we have that delight, then, you know, the practice becomes much easier. And that's why at the beginning of our practice, sometimes things are so difficult. We can't get ourselves to the cushion. You know, we open up a Dharma book and then we think, well, I really have to answer these letters and I have to read the junk mail because there might be an important sale I'm missing. And, you know, we think of all these other things that we have to do instead. We are so easily distracted. Whereas with this joyous effort, it keeps us really going in line, and then the mind wants to practice. Yeah? So Monday, Wednesday night comes along, you go, oh good, I get to go to class. Not, oh, I have to sit there with this cat again. You know? But, you know, the mind wants to come, or there's noone, and oh, I want to go and do this, or there's retreats, or, you know, whatever it is, you know. The alarm clock goes off at 5 o'clock in the morning. It's time to do your meditation. You want to get up and do it. Okay, so it's a real reversal in the attitude. So at the beginning of the practice, we don't have much of this joyous effort, and that's why often the practice is quite difficult. But as we begin to practice, we see the results, we see the benefits of it, then automatically the mind takes more interest, becomes more joyful, and wants to engage in it. Yeah. So that's why at the beginning of the practice, sometimes it takes a little bit of effort, you know, just not joyous effort, but just plain old effort, to kind of keep ourselves going, getting ourselves going. But then after we begin to have some taste of it and what the practice brings, it really produces some good results. I may have mentioned this to some of you before. Maybe I said it Monday night. I can't even remember now. But I just got a letter from one of my students who I met in India. He came to some courses I was giving there. This was in the end of 1990. And I just got a letter from him, and he said that he just did a retreat and he was really beginning to get some taste of that thing that you call meditation. He said, it's been 3 years now that I've been making myself meditate, and all these other retreats and practices, I haven't felt like what I've been doing has been getting me anywhere. And then because of this most recent retreat and getting some taste of it, he begins to see that everything he was doing before, where it was more just willpower that got him to do it, that was actually helping to create, you know, the circumstance and building up the energy so that this last retreat he did was, you know, quite meaningful and deep for him. Yeah. So at the beginning, you can see it's just kind of this willpower that kept him going. And now it's very much delight in the practice. And he wrote in the letter that before he couldn't even sit for 45 minutes and meditate. It was impossible for him. But in this last retreat, he was doing a couple of hours and wanting to do more each session. Okay, so there's different kinds of enthusiastic perseverance, different classifications. The most common one is talking about, first of all, armor-like joyous effort or enthusiastic perseverance. And this is the mind, it's like an armor. It has this strength to it. It has this brilliance and this shine to it. And it really takes the challenge of the Dharma practice. It has like a courageous and a buoyant mind that is interested in working for the benefit of sentient beings. So it's an armor. And it gives this strength to the mind so that we say, well, even if I have to remain in cyclic existence for eons and eons for the sake of sentient beings, it's okay with me. I'm happy to do it. You know? Even I have to give up, you know, all these good movies to go to Dharma class, I'm really happy to do it. You know, there's different levels of practice about what we have to give up. You know, it's the mind that has that kind of courage that isn't weak, but it has this buoyancy and strength and vibrance to it. So that's armor-like joyous effort. And the second kind of joyous effort is acting constructively. So this is the joyous effort of just, you know, kind of throwing ourselves into the practice of doing constructive actions. And so with this kind of joyous effort, then as we go through the day, we're really on the lookout for, you know, whatever we can do that's beneficial for others, whatever we can do that would create a cause for enlightenment, whatever that we can do that puts good imprint on our mind or on the mind streams of others. Okay, so it's the joyous effort of acting constructively. And then the third joyous effort is the joyous effort of working for the benefit of sentient beings. You notice this one, for working for the benefit of sentient beings, it's one of the categories of ethics, it's one of the categories of patience, one of the categories of joyous effort. It's going to come up in wisdom, and, you know, it's going to come up a few more times, too. But it's, you know, before we had the ethics of working for sentient beings, being ethical while we're working for them. Then we had being patient while we're working for them, you know, not getting angry at, you know, when they don't appreciate everything we do for them. And then this is, you know, the joyous effort of working for them, where again, the mind is lighthearted and enthusiastic and wants to do things instead of, you know, heavy and dragging and dull and unmotivated. You know, it's light and lively. So light and lively, isn't that some kind of yogurt? Anyway, you know, it's that same kind of feeling. So, and there's the principal obstacle to generating joyous effort is, guess what? That's it. Laziness. Yeah. So laziness is the mind. There's this very nice technical definition of it. I'll read to you. Having grasped the object offering temporary happiness. Either you don't want to do anything virtuous, although you wish to, you are weak-minded. Ring any bells? Okay. And it's interesting in this, you know, having grasped the object of temporary or temporal happiness. Okay. So there's one foot in samsara. There's one foot that's looking for pleasure in objects of the senses, in, you know, what we call samsaric perfections and temporary things. And we grasp onto that. And having grasped onto that, then we lose our interest in the path. We lose the interest in acting constructively because we think the benefits of this temporary happiness are so much greater than the benefits of the Dharma practice. Yeah, I mean, chocolate ice cream brings much more happiness than meditation. We go for it. Yeah? And we do. We go for it. We, you know, we lose all interest in what is wholesome and positive. We grasp on to the object offering temporary happiness. Or even part, you know, although one foot's in samsara, we have, you know, one toe in nirvana, and half of the mind is saying, yeah, it would be really nice to do some practice now, but, you know, that mind, the yes but mind, okay, yeah, it'd be really good, but really I have all these other things I need to do, and I'm just too tired, and she said I shouldn't push myself, so I guess I shouldn't push. I should take it easy and relax. And I feel like I'm getting a cold, so if I sit and meditate, that's too strenuous. I might get really sick. You know? Okay? So the mind that although it kind of wants to do something, it's weak. It lacks energy. Yeah, very easily distracted. So that's what laziness is. And there's three specific kinds of laziness. And I find this division of the three kinds of laziness something incredibly interesting. Because it gives a whole different perspective on what the word laziness means than what our English word laziness means. You know? Our English word laziness, what do we think of? Lying around, being slothful, lethargic, sleeping, you know? Sitting down in front of the TV and spacing out, okay? Lying on the beach and getting suntan for all the day, okay? Going to sleep and sleeping for 12 hours or, you know, getting up at noon. That's what we think of as lazy. Now, that is included in the Buddhist definition of laziness. But there's also other kinds of laziness, okay? So the first kind of laziness is the laziness of procrastination or the laziness of sloth or indolence. And that's this one we usually call laziness, okay? The second kind of laziness is attraction to being very busy, okay? Attachment to worldly activities. So this is what, in worldly language, we call being enthusiastic, being intelligent, having a lot of energy, being a go-getter, and being successful. But according to a Buddhist interpretation, all that effort put into, you know, samsaric pleasure and success is a form of laziness. Why? Because we've lost interest in the Dharma. Our mind is weak when it comes to the Dharma. Yeah. So isn't that interesting? What we would usually associate with being very busy, with being a workaholic, becomes being lazy in Buddhism. And then the third kind of laziness is the laziness of discouragement, of putting ourselves down. But we don't need to talk about much about that one because we Americans have lots of confidence. We don't put ourselves down. Okay, so that's just to outline them. I want to go back and explain them a little bit more in depth and the antidotes to them because it's quite interesting when you start to think about it.